This is the Royal Blue Podcast from the Liverpool Echo, giving you the inside track on all the big talking points from Goodison Park.
Hello, everybody, and welcome to the Royal Blue Podcast. My name is Joe Thomas. I am the Echo's Everton FC correspondent. Alongside me here in the office on Old Hall Street, I've got my colleague Chris Beasley, and we've got Gav Buckland, who has somehow been the only person in the whole of the UK who's managed to find a cold spot during the past week. Probably necessary to have a bit of an apology because it's been a week since we haven't done a post-Bournemouth pod yet. And as bizarre as that is, all three of us just found ourselves in situations last week where we just couldn't quite get involved, which isn't particularly ideal. But, you know, I think given the stress of what Everton have put us through for the last 10 months, I think we all needed a little bit of time to decompress after that. Gav, you've had a few days off. You've had a week to kind of get over the fact that Everton are definitely a Premier League side for next season. What's it feel like living without the burden of the stress that they've put us through for pretty much the last 24 months? How are you feeling?
Relief, but I think there's a bit of realism there from everybody, isn't there? That, you know, it doesn't take away the our issues in terms of finances and ownership and that type of stuff. So it's... feel as if we've been given a bit of breathing space on this, and then I think that's good. We should all enjoy that. But as we'll probably discuss on this pod and pods on the summer, there's still issues, isn't there, within the club. But mightily relieved, and you know, it gives you time to think about what might have happened, and think, you know, the worst case scenario. And when you see what it was like on other grounds on the final day, particularly at Leicester, so that could have been us. And you know, if you compare the two atmospheres in both grounds, it just shows you how, I won't say lucky, well, we were a bit lucky, I suppose, you know, how grateful we should be that we've got Premier League, you know, Premier League certainty for next season. So relief, but a bit of realism within that, Joe, to be honest with you, like a lot of Everton fans I've spoken to.
Chris, will we just think back to that Bournemouth game a minute? I mean, one thing, I mean, Gav kind of alluded to the scenes at the end of the final whistle on the, you know, with Leeds, Leicester and Everton, and the contrast in emotion. But if we go back to the very start of the game on Sunday, I mean, it really was an interesting atmosphere at Everton, wasn't it? Because, I mean, I remember sitting there, and I've been sat there for a good couple of hours because, you know, I tell you, Chris jokes, but I was kind of almost too nervous and too anxious to do anything of any note before the game against Bournemouth. So I got into the ground early, and rather than, you know, we're very fortunate we get food in the press box, I basically took a Greg's meal deal and went and sat up in the stands because I just couldn't cope with the growing pressure and the small talk in the hours before it. But I mean, you know, it was such a big game and there was so much pressure, yet really in Goodison Park it almost felt like a party. It almost felt like more of a celebration, the way in which the crowd got up for that at the start of that match. You know, it really was something that was spectacular, wasn't it?
I was going to say fortunate, but that's not the word at all. I was there in 94. I was there in 98. And obviously I was there on Sunday in a professional capacity. And similar sort of scenes again, especially in 94. I remember the noise, the wall of noise that hit you from those Evertonians when they came out. Obviously, there was no fireworks back then. I know you were quite startled yourself. But those fireworks went off after Everton scored. But at the start of the game, I'm sure that Leicester City's fans were getting behind them in a big way. Same with Leeds United, although obviously they fell behind quite early on. But I imagine the noise at the King Power Stadium, the noise at Elland Road, I'm not having that was as loud as what it was at Goodison Park. You were saying, Joe, there were colleagues covering the Battle of Atlantic stuff across the water over there in Wallasey. They could hear it on the other side of the river. Goodison Park was so loud that day, and I remember going back to Wimbledon again in 94, the Match of the Day commentator watching it back that night, and he said, you know, a set of supporters who have come to cheer their side and they don't know, it's a welcome fit for champions from a group of supporters who don't know whether they've come to cheer or to see their side buried. And that's what it was like again at Everton against Bournemouth. They were giving them absolutely everything. I think that was the great disappointment after the Newcastle United result, where Goodison, where the fans gave so much, and it still wasn't enough that night. And that was the fear amongst Evertonians, that, you know, the fans alone can't get them over the line. But yeah, I was there in the streets on County Road before kickoff, when the street, when it was, you know, the traffic was having to be diverted. And yeah, I can understand what you say, not party atmosphere in terms of a celebration. But yeah, they're absolutely giving it everything, that set of supporters. And of course, it means so much. Shouldn't belittle or downplay what it means to other clubs, but just for Everton, given that, you know, it's one of the few things that Evertonians can cling on to, this proud record of continuous football in the top flight. So it would have been such a big thing for Everton to slip out of their less relegation in 72 years. And they came so mightily close, but yeah, it was something special in that respect. And it just makes you sort of wonder what things might be like if Everton just got a bit of success in the near future, you know, for these fans to actually have something to cheer about.
Well, that's it. I just thought, obviously, you used to wear pie, but it didn't feel like the Grim Reaper was kind of hovering over Goodison Park at, you know, 4:29 on that Sunday, you know, last Sunday of May, did it? And I think just, you know, we've spoken a lot on here, and obviously, you know, a lot of places have, about the role that the fans have played in keeping Everton up in the last two seasons. And I think during the darkest moments of this season, in particular, I think Brighton, I think Newcastle, those horrendous second half collapses. You know, one of the things that's really got to me has been the silence around Goodison Park, almost a muted acceptance that it's a club that possibly doesn't deserve to stay in the Premier League, regardless of what happens in the weeks that follow. And you sit there and you listen to the resignation that is almost vociferous within that, deafening within the silence. And I kind of almost wondered whether or not Everton fans would have enough to get them to carry on getting themselves up time and time again. And then you see the fans at Leicester, and you see the fans at Brighton, you see the fans at Wolves, and you see the fans on, you know, on that final day, because that's it. Like, I feel like it didn't, Goodison Park didn't feel tense at 4:30. You know, it felt like there was a positive atmosphere behind the players, and that must have really, really helped them, because we know it's a side that can get nervous. And obviously, it didn't help, I think, this story of Everton, you know, season to some extent. But obviously, as that game started and Everton didn't get the early breakthrough, the fans stayed with them. All right, there was a little bit of, you know, it went a little bit quiet just after Leicester, you know, went 1-0 up, and that news filtered through. But even then, there was a bit of a rallying cry. And one of the things I, again, was really impressed by, it was almost quite fitting, wrote this in a match report at the end, was obviously we're getting towards that hour mark. We know Leicester are winning. Everton have done what they've done a few times under Dyche, where it's clear that they have the determination and the willpower to try and get a positive result. But sometimes they just don't have the ability. You know, it's time and time again. If they can't overpower a side through determination or sheer will, quite often they don't have the tools to unlock it. And I was just starting to get nervous just before that goal came. And again, the same as it is in my match report, I just remember, I think the goal comes in about 57 minutes, something like that. And a couple of minutes before that, the crowd just kind of spontaneously erupted into, I think it was Spirit of the Blues or something like that. It just kind of went around the ground, and it just seemed quite fitting that, you know, as the crest of that wave, you know, crashed onto the pitch, it was Decore who then pops up and scores that goal. Gareth, when that goal went in, I mean, again, something that I think my first line in the match report, it was a goal that came from nothing but meant everything. I mean, how relieved were you?
That's an understatement, isn't it, really? Well, not relieved. It was because, you know, a goal either way can change things. You're excited, and that was reflected, I think, in the direction of the crowds. I mean, the noise was unbelievable. It reminds me, and Chris, I'm sadly before Chris's time, but he'll know what I'm talking about. As a goal, in terms of the setup of it, and the execution, now he was a far cleaner strike. It reminded me of Andy King's famous goal against Liverpool in 1978. Chris, that was at the Park End, and that came from a ball lumped into the area, came back out to Kingy, God bless him, who was standing at the edge of the area, sat up nicely for him, and Kingy hit it, but he was a far less cleaner strike than Decore. Kingy sort of hit through the sides of the ball, and it it skewed off into the corner. It wasn't as clean as strike, but it was basically identical goal and equally important. It was his first derby win for 7 years. Yeah, it was. Yeah, it wasn't excited. I was relieved. I was excited, or just relieved at the end, really. It wasn't a great 20 odd minutes, that was it, between Leicester scoring and us scoring. You know, you're sitting there and you're thinking, as it stands, we're down. You know, and I think that was just horrible time. So, yeah, relieved. But the noise was unbelievable. I've heard lots of people say that it was the loudest you've ever heard Goodison. And, you know, I can't think in recent memory, hearing a louder, you know, louder crowd noise at our home. And, yeah, excited a little bit, relieved a little bit, but still tense at the immediate aftermath. Because then it's yours to lose, isn't it, then? And that's the thing, is in some respects, that was the thing at the start of the game. We had to win, didn't we? That was, I know Leicester had happened, but you think you've got to win to score it. Now we've got the victory that we need. It adds an extra layer of tension on, isn't it? Really, it's ours to lose, an extra pressure. So, yeah, relief, but what a noise from the crowd. And I say, for me, brought back memories of Andy King's famous goal in 1978. But yeah, it was a great strike, wasn't it?
Some strike.
Yeah, it was a fantastic strike, to be fair. Yeah.
One of those that stays hit.
Yeah. And you know the other thing as well, which I think, fair play to the, like, Bournemouth didn't come to lie down at all. They did, you know, in fact, they came to, it was a bit of a Mourinho-esque performance at Anfield in 2014, wasn't it? Of chronic time wasted and keeping the ball and stuff. And the reaction of their players when Corey scored says everything. Like, the goalie was like banging his hands into the floor, wasn't he, and stuff. They were absolutely gutted. They conceded, which I think for the integrity of the Premier League and stuff is really important, and shows you that, like, you know, to get a win was, you know, far more difficult than what we thought it'd be, because Bournemouth came to spoil and had their occasional moments of you know, where they could have grabbed the goal. And as a neutral, we say, well, that's what Premier League football is about, isn't it? You want to see that reaction from Bournemouth players. And it was a great goal. Fair play to Decore. The only thing I'd say is I bet he wish he was doing his contract renegotiations after that goal, yeah, the week after that goal, rather than the week before, wasn't it, really? Might have added on another, you know, I renew my contract, another, you know, put 20 grand a week on top of that I've earned you with that goal.
The Royal Blue Podcast from the Liverpool Echo.
Yeah, well, it's fitting it should come from Decore, I think, because no player has done more for Dyche since he came in at the back end of January than Decore. Obviously brought in from the cold. And I think something I wrote after the game saying that 5 goals and 2 assists from Decore in the 15 games he played under Dyche. That's contributed in those games more than 20%, more than a fifth of all of Everton's Premier League goals in the whole season, which, again, is a stat that really just shows the poverty of what we've witnessed, really, I think, rather than anything else. But yeah, you're right, Gav. I think obviously good for the integrity of the game, although not good for the nerves. I think I've been following Borussia Dortmund throwing away the Bundesliga against a side with little to play for the day before when they needed a win at home, and thinking surely that's going to happen, and they didn't do it. And I was thinking, it can't happen at Goodison as well, can it? You know, it's the side with something to play for and all in its hands goes and loses it all. Chris, I mean, once you'd dusted the mud from your knees after going onto the pitch after that game, just to clarify, he didn't. Yeah. Very, very much in the press seat still with me. I mean, what was, we'll skip over, you know, we've written a lot about it, and obviously everyone has probably to a degree heard about what Dyche just said after. Very kind of, very similar to his approach to the whole of his tenure, really, at Everton so far, where he was very contrary almost. If you if you say, oh, do you want to Pickford played really well today, you'll say, well, Michael Keane had a good game or something like that, didn't he? I remember I was the one asking the first question in the press conference after, and you asked him what he made of it, and his response was, it's a horrible day. I get what you're saying, and you're right. And I think that level of realism is what is necessary at Everton this summer, because it perhaps was missing last summer. But when you were going away from the stadium after finishing all your work following the game, for that night's website and the next day's paper, what was the what was the overriding feeling that it was going through your head?
Well, I think for all of us, it was a great weight lifting off our shoulders because whether it's in professional capacity, whether it, you know, for Everton's fortunes, you've got to remember it's not just the team. Did a piece today about comparing to Manchester United's woes and how are they paling significance to what Evertonians are going through. You know, we had many a conversation, Joe and I, and actually shared this journey. I said, we don't want to have this particular journey again throughout the seasons. And there were many times when we pondered the various things that might happen and where Everton might be going next season, our own roles. And then think about all those hard-working people at the club. Okay, when teams get relegated, it's often a fire sale of players. But I think the closest comparison you've got, and it's something you looked at, Joe, wasn't it? It was Aston Villa in 2016 when they went down and 500 people lost their jobs. And so it's just such a great weight lift off your shoulders, not just from the team's point of view, but just for everything, that clarity that it brought to all our lives, both professionally and personally. And that the fact, I thought it was disgusting that they got so close to that. Now, before the FFP measures started to bite, you know, I doubt there's been a team in football history as squanders as much money to get as bad as what Everton have done. Because like, as we've spoken already in the pod, they've been here in 94 and 98, but they were very different circumstances. They didn't have somebody like Farhad Moshiri at the helm who's been able to spend all this money. And like I said, to a larger extent, squander it, as he admitted himself last summer. They've not always spent larger amounts of money wisely. So just to be in this position, it was absolutely disgusting, really. And let's not sugarcoat the situation, as Sean Dyche himself didn't. He said, you know, big club not performing like a big club. This is the worst equivalence points total in Everton's entire history. 135 years of playing in the Football League and the Premier League. They've never performed as badly as they have done over the past season. There's fewer points in last season, obviously, which was the joint worst in the club's history until now. Many a year, that wouldn't have been good enough to keep you in the Premier League. And major changes are required now to avoid a repeat of this. And you know, can't just have platitudes and say you're going to do something and nothing actually happens. Major change is required now because you cannot have a repeat of this situation. I think Sean Dyche himself was more or less portraying that message in what he said.
Obviously, it was a message that we made, you know, loud and clear on the front page of the following day's Echo. And obviously, that's something that we've been looking at doing for quite some time, really. And I think that there might have been a few points in the weeks prior to the final game of the season where it could have been something that we could have done. But by that point, we didn't want to do anything that would distract away from the relegation battle whilst Everton was still in it. But hopefully most of you will have seen the front page of the Echo on the Monday morning: survival but not success, time for change at Everton. And I think that, you know, there's a news story within it, and we did this at the end of last season, say as soon as Everton survived against Crystal Palace, we put them on the front page and said, you know, things need to change. Yeah. Obviously, they haven't.
No.
You know, and I think, you know, in 12 months, that was the fifth time Everton have been on the front page of the Liverpool Echo, you know, and which isn't always an easy thing to do. And obviously, you know, it comes with consequences and things like that. We understand the, you know, the repercussions these things and how these things can be interpreted by people at the club and by others as well. But I think there comes a point, and really we are at that probably now, where Everton can't continue in the same manner in which they've been doing so for the past few years, can they? Because they were lucky last year to get a second chance and then to blow it in the way that they did and end up in the same position this time round is just unforgivable, I think. And they can't afford a third strike. They can't afford to do this for another season. So, you know, it's very difficult to see Everton making any progress. At the very least, an attitude change within the hierarchy there, which accepts that, you know, it feels very much like there's a desire to almost say we've been affected by foul winds from afar that we've had no control of, bad luck has led to this situation rather than bad management or bad stewardship. Well, whether you look at the points tallies or whether you look at the accounts,
yeah,
you know, none of it makes a positive reading. And the reality is, I think that Everton do need a degree of change within the club, within their attitude towards the fans, the way in which they're running the club. And also they need fresh ideas and fresh innovation, because it's clear that whatever's going on at the moment just isn't working, is it? Whatever the change might be, and we do anticipate there probably will be some degree of change this summer, though, again, we have to be careful because we have got to this point of exclusivity arrangements with people before, and things have probably happened last summer. But Gav, I mean, don't want to throw your hospital pass here, but obviously, I mean, what's you're one step removed from us. You're not in the newsroom. You're a fan. You go to the games. You've dedicated years of your life to studying and following, and your emotions and your nerves have been spent on Everton Football Club. I mean, you know, what do you think needs to happen this summer? Ideally, I mean, do you think it's time for a few fresh ideas, or do you think it's
Yeah, that's very much a hospital pass joke. No, seriously, I mean, the point is, I'd raise one point here, which I think is important. And I said this at the pod before the Bournemouth game, this feeling that Everton as a club are too big to go down, and followed by the quote, this should not be allowed to happen again, as if we've got a divine right to be in the Premier League. We haven't. As I quoted before in the last pod, according to the Deloitte rich Premier League clubs list, richest Premier League clubs list, outside the big six, the seventh richest club, West Ham, survived with two games left. The eighth richest club, which I think was Leicester, went down. The ninth richest club, Leeds, went down. The tenth richest club, Everton, stayed up by a goal. So, you know, we have to, as fans, we have to get away from this thing about, oh, we're too big a club, and we should be facing this as if we're like a Man United or a Liverpool. We're not. We're part of a group of clubs whose revenue are pretty much similar. I mean, we only get £40 million more than Brentford, say, and that gap can easily be closed by good coaching. So, it's funny that outside of the big six, we've got obviously the longest period of time, the Premier League, 70 years. The next highest is West Ham with 11. You know, so the Shearer referred to this on Match of the Day, that if you're not in the big six, you've always got a chance of being relegated because you're all around the same. You're all getting the same amount of revenue from telly, commercial, all that type of stuff. So at some point, if you're badly managed, and you have a bad couple of seasons, but underperform on and off the pitch, you probably go down. And that's nearly happened to us over the last two seasons. So this, we need to get, first of all, assessing where we are as a club. Get away from this thing about we're too big to go down. It shouldn't happen. Of course it should happen, because it's part of the ebbs and flows of football. We are not too big that we can, you know, like a big six club, you can stay in the Premier League ad infinitum. So that's the first thing I'd say, some realism around that. What needs to happen in the summer? Well, it's limited, isn't it, really? I think, and you know, you're encouraged to think by maybe outward investment coming in and bringing in some external expertise. I think that will be definitely beneficial. I think also as well, I think hopefully with Thelwell being there a little bit longer than what he's done now. Thelwell, is it 18? Was it 2 years? Is it 18 months?
Yeah, February
22. Yeah. So he's had a bit more time to sort of organise things off the pitch. Hopefully get a more defined decision-making process to exclude people who shouldn't be involved in football and decisions. That needs to happen. But that's all well and good. But at the end of the day, we've only got a limited amount of money, haven't we? If that, I mean. And the one thing we've forgotten in all of this about, I heard about like there was going to be a big transfer summer, it isn't, is if we have got cash for the moment, cash is not going to be spent on players coming into the club in the summer. It's well-known fact to think that the likes of an Arnott and McNeil, those transfer fees weren't paid in full up front, where they were paid on the drift. So there's going to be money going out to the club during the summer to pay for players we've already got at the club. So that we need to factor that in. So what needs to change, I think, is smart recruitment, isn't it, really? You know, to avoid some of the missed opportunities last year. And I think that smart recruitment comes with Thelwell having a bit more experience at the club, and hopefully Dice having a lot more input as well as the manager. And I think that's the key relationship for me, because we're just going to have to work smarter, aren't we? and be more imaginative in our dealings. And I think also what we've not done properly is identify gaps and fill them. We all saw the centre forward fiasco last summer. You know, we ended up with no left back. You know, we're filling right back at the end of the season. Is to avoid issues like that by a smarter recruitment process. Some of our loan dealings last year weren't great, really. And work smarter, more power to Thirlwell and Dyche would be my starting point, really, for the summer.
The Royal Blue Podcast from the Liverpool Echo.
Obviously, we've already started to see some of the thought processes play out in the past week, that, you know, that there are departures on the way. We knew that Yerry Mina was going to go. Obviously, he posted, it was always looking likely, but he posted on Instagram the night before the Bournemouth game to say that that would be his last. We know that Everton haven't triggered their options to buy Ruben Vinagre. That's not a surprise. He barely featured at all when he was fit under Frank Lampard or Sean Dyche. Connor Cody is another one that's leaving. Again, not triggered the option there. And then Asmir Begovic posted on his social media channels over the weekend to suggest that, well, to point heavily to the fact that he's leaving as well. I mean, Chris, just of those just of those decisions so far, yeah. I mean, what, and obviously the other one that we do is we know that Decore is staying because they have triggered the option to extend his contract by a year. And also just another one, sorry, Niels Nkunku's gone to Saint-Étienne because they have triggered the deal to sign him. I mean, what do you think, what's your biggest takeaway from that first week of summer so far? I mean, have any of those decisions surprised you?
I think the one that's obviously the most surprising, but I can't say that I am surprised, but was certainly the one that could have gone either way would be Connor Cody. Like I say, Vinagre didn't play the Premier League after August. He'd like run out in the League Cup. He ended up injured. Sad to see Asmir Begovic going, if that's the case, as obviously he looks like, as we were discussing off air before we came in, he's probably a good number two as you could have, and maybe he's looking for more regular football elsewhere in the latter part of his career. But yeah, Connor Cody, it was a deal at the start of the season that looked inspired, didn't it? I mean, you were thinking, what's gone on at Wolves? Are we missing a trick here? It's too good to be true. An option to bring him in permanently for believed to be about $4.5 million as well. You know, an absolute model pro. He'd not missed a game, had he, for about 6 years at the time in the Premier League and England International, who obviously went to the World Cup as a non-playing squad member. But again, because he's such a great guy around the camp, he was seen as beneficial in that respect. It looked like an absolute shoe-in probably for over half the season at Connor Cody, that it was just going to be a formality, that would become a...
Well, it was. I think Frank basically said that, didn't he? As long as Frank Lampard was there, Connor Cody signing permanently was, you know, it's a when is this going to happen? When are they going to push the button on this rather than if? Obviously, Frank Lampard's not there anymore. It hasn't been some time.
Yeah, so everything changed. And not straight away, because he started, didn't he, on the Dyche, but was it the Arsenal away game when he dropped him, brought Keane in? And then Yerry Mina ended up finishing the season alongside James Tarkowski, who we were looking today. I think was he the only Premier League outfield player to play every minute this season. So he was the ever present, and then alongside him it changed. So at the end of the day, when Cody was no longer a regular, no, obviously he came back and played the last game of the season when they switched to the back three again. But yeah, he was no longer a regular, so I suppose you couldn't be too surprised that one didn't end up going live. I mean, he was probably hugely disappointed. I know he started his career at Liverpool, but he was made up to be back on his native Merseyside, chance to sort of finish his career back home, playing for Everton and going to the new stadium, and none of that's going to happen now. I'd see what happens. I know Sheffield United have been linked, and you noticed that he was such a popular guy at Wolves. I mean, there's still question marks there. Who knows? He might even end up back at Molineux next season. But yeah, I suppose, I know a lot of people were saying, including our colleague Conor O'Neill did a piece about it, about how he felt, how he should have got that deal over the line. But I couldn't say I was majorly surprised about it, given that the way the season ended for Cody.
It's interesting. I kind of feel that I would have liked to have kept him. I think he's a good pro. He's someone that stays fit. So many of Everton's problems on the pitch recently have stemmed from, not having cover, whether it's injuries. And he's someone that does stay fit. And he's someone that obviously he's a positive influence in the dressing room. And he's somebody that also gives. And it looks like Sean Dyche would have preferred to play a back four. There's a lot of talk about Cody potentially being better into five. And whether that's true or not, one thing he does do, as Evan did against Bournemouth on the final day, is he's someone you've got in your locker that you can make that change. You can change formations and you've got someone that can come in trusted and do a job. But where I would say I can see where the club are coming from is the fact that one area where they have a lot of players is centre-backs. Yeah. And it looks very much, we asked Sean Dyche about summer plans and things like that after the Bournemouth game. And he was saying that he didn't know what his budget was. Okay, well, we probably know he has a rough idea what his budget is now. I haven't had a week since then to kind of start planning properly or move to stage two of preparing for next season. And it looking like it's probably not going to be that much. If I've been in a situation, £4.5 million for Cody as a package, I think in general terms is a bit of a bargain. I know players over 30 don't tend to move for that amount of money, but what you do see is you see a lot of players 30, 31, 32 come to the end of their contracts and go for significant, big money moves where the lack of transfer fee ends up being go to them in the signing on and their wages and things like that. But he's only a bargain at £4.5 million if you've got a full spare £4.5 million to spare.
Yeah.
And I don't think that Everton have £4.5 million to spend on what could be, depending on how the summer unfolds, a sixth choice or one of a sixth centre back.
Yeah.
Or it may be fewer than that now because obviously Mina's gone. But you've got Tarkowski, and Tarkowski looks like he's never presently starting. You've got Michael Keane. You've got Jared Branthwaite coming back from a very good loan spell at PSV. And then you've got Holgate and you've got Godfrey. So you've already got five options there. And I think if you're Sean Dyche, you're looking at it, you're thinking, I'm going to have a summer where I've got to fill in some blanks on in this squad. Well, I've got five centre-backs there. Surely there's got to be a way in which I can find someone to partner James Tarkowski within that or move people out of the club. I wouldn't be surprised. Conor Cody at £4.5 million, and he may well still be available for something like that at the back end of the summer. It's almost, if Everton were to say, we might cash in on Jared Branthwaite, there's a lot of interest in him from other clubs, they might take the money for him. If they might find, say, someone for to take Mason Holgate, there were clubs that were keen on Mason Holgate in January, and Everton didn't want to let them go because they didn't want to strengthen a rival because it was mainly bottom end of the Premier League that they were looking for. If all of a sudden a couple of them go, and then all of a sudden, you might get 6 million for Holgate, you might get 20 million for Branthwaite or whatever, and then you can bring in Cody for 4.5. That looks good business. But I think Everton can't do this summer is they can't spend money before they've got it. And I think that's probably what triggering that loan deal would be a case of. Because Everton end up in a situation where they do that and then they can't move anybody else on, and it becomes very difficult. It's going to be interesting. You obviously mentioned Godfrey and Holgate there to see what he does there. Because I'm not sure that Dyche fancies them at centre-back either. Because whenever Holgate's got minutes for Dyche, hasn't been at centre-back. It's been at full-back covering people. But even in the behind-closed-doors games when he's played them, he's typically played in defensive centre midfield. And that's clearly not another position that isn't Mason Holgate. So, it really is kind of a fascinating one to watch. But, say Everton need at the very least, they need another left-back, someone that can challenge Mykolenko. They arguably need a right-back. I suspect Coleman will stay if he wants to stay. But even then, he's, getting on, had a few injuries. Nathan Patterson, looks a really promising young talent, but just can't get a bit of luck with injuries. So you look at that and you think, they could probably do with someone else at right back. And that's before you even get to, as Gav has already alluded to, things like your strikers and the lack of creativity within that squad, the lack of goals within there.
The Royal Blue Podcast from the Liverpool Echo.
So when you start piecing it together, you can already get to a scenario where you think, in an ideal world, you'd take Cody and Everton would probably be stronger. In terms of packages, you're probably not getting much of a better package for £4.5 million or something like Everton isn't this summer. But again, it's only a good value if you've got the money to spend in the first place. I mean, I don't know what your thoughts on all that are, Gav. Where do you sit on the line there?
I'm with you. I think he's just a victim of financial circumstances, isn't he, really? And it's not really a reflection on his ability as a player and his professionalism, really. It's a situation where 2 years ago, say, he would have been bought, wouldn't he? He would have spent £4.5 million. But now, as you say, there's and I suppose we're saying this, I haven't criticised the club all season. For saying, why, we've got six centre-halves and no full-backs and no striker, you know, you can't say now to say, well, hang on a minute, we've not bought a centre-half, you know, you've got choices elsewhere. So, yeah, it makes sense. If you've got £4.5 million to spend to use it elsewhere, I think left-back looks like a particularly vulnerable area for us at the moment. Be interesting to see what happens with Brantwaite as well. And I think also as well, you know, we're talking about things happening to summer is, we've got players who are out of contract, haven't we, next summer, is that right? It will be out next summer. Is his contract up?
He's one of the ones. He's the third one, isn't he? The one that hasn't got over the line. There was the talk started probably around November last year, didn't it? And then Iwobi hasn't materialised into a new deal. Pickford eventually did, and obviously Anthony Gordon didn't, and he ended up moving.
It's just making sure we protect the transfer fees for some players. I mean, that list is endless, isn't it, of players who've spent £20 million plus on over the last 6 years, who've gone for the free, of which there are going to be players next year who are probably going to be in that list. I think Gomez will be one and Gabana will be another.
It's interesting you say that, Gav, actually. Yeah. I mean, to what extent do you think this summer there are some really big decisions, probably not decisions to me. I think we could probably all guess what Everton would like to do, Gav. But one of the significant issues that Dyche is going to have to deal with is probably the return of some of those players that have been out on loan and are coming back in still under contract and still on significant wages. Obviously, we've seen Gomez, you know, Gomez has had a good season out in France, but I think we've seen enough of him post-injury at Everton to suggest that there probably isn't a future for him in a Sean Dyche team. I think it's sad. We all know how good he was when he initially came to the club, but sadly, that injury that he suffered against Spurs really did kind of set him back. I think his last involvement in Everton shirt was being withdrawn at half-time for another of the players who falls into the same bracket, Dele Alli.
Dele Alli,
Palace game that obviously was the back end of the last. Dele Alli is another player coming back on big wages, still under contract. Can Everton find a suitor for him? And then the other one is obviously Jean-Philippe Gabamon, whose agent, I think, has suggested he won't be hanging around Everton. Yeah. But that only ever works if someone's willing to take him off him and pay his wages or pay a transfer fee or whatever. I mean, how big of a challenge do you think they're going to be for Dyche and Falwell to deal with, Gav? And is there any one of those three or any of the others that have perhaps been out of favour recently that you would consider giving a chance or hold any hope for?
I think Obama's ship is well sailed, hasn't he? I think he says he doesn't want to come back, doesn't he? I think I'm right in saying that. Gomez, possibly. Problem with Dele Alli is he's got this £10 million or whatever hanging over us for reaching a certain threshold of appearances. So you would imagine that it goes back to the Cody situation, doesn't it? That financially it doesn't make any sense for him to stay here. I'll be, you know, different because he's contracted to us. So he would be need to move on somewhere. So I think it's just better management of the squad. You know, that's just going forwards about, you know, smarter management, avoiding the situation going forwards where we have, you know, players who end up on a free. I mean, Mina's another one. Chris, we were speaking about Mina's contract 2 years ago and about whether it should be renewed or not. Or, I mean, saying that, well, 2 years on from the end of his contract should be sold because we've ended up letting him go on a free. A player who still would probably command a fee if he was under contract. So I think it's just smarter operating in that area as well. But it's up to Thelwell, well, really. I really like Dele Alli. I like to think he could do a job for us. But it's this finance deal, isn't it, with him, that's going to cause a blockage there, really. I think he finishes next year, doesn't he, Alli? The 2.5 year deal. Yeah, so it's going to be up to Thelwell, well. Isn't it really? I suppose if you're looking at them, the one that's most likely to stay would be Gomez, wouldn't it really? In a realistic world, if Gabon wants to go, we get a shooter. Dele Alli, hopefully. Gomez possibly could still could still do a job for you as a backup. That's how we'll have to do some wheeling and dealing there, and to say, there's a lot of words being spoken since the end of the season about players coming in. There's enough work for the summer about key players out of the club and, you know, on foreign fields, so that we're not meeting all their wage costs. That's going to be a challenge and a half in itself. You forget about that, don't you, when you talk about directors of football and managers and stuff. It's not just about the players bringing them in. It's management of the players at the club that you need to shift around to avoid unnecessary cost.
Yeah, it's going to be an interesting one. I think we've already, having dealt with all the stress that Everton have put us under recently, you know, we're back now, semi-refreshed. I think some of the bags have gone from under our eyes, but we're heading right into that kind of familiar territory, certainly for the next few months, where it's the in-the-know season, where it feels like every other tweet on the timeline is Everton being linked to, or an Everton player being linked away, and spending the summer trying to work out what's going on, what's not, is always a little bit of a challenge. Chris, is it as simple as saying that Everton need to start looking at fullbacks and strikers, or is there anywhere else that you think is a particularly key point that Dyche might look at?
The Royal Blue Podcast from the Liverpool Echo.
Rather than fullbacks and strikers, I'd say strikers and then fullbacks.
Well, of course.
I think the biggest challenge is what you've just been talking about, is shipping off this deadwood. I think all of those players, even in an ideal situation, they're not getting into a Sean Dyche team. They've all failed under previous regimes, and include Gomez in that. Absolute liability off the ball, lovely fella, easy on the eye, and you know, all the Evertonians really admired him at first, but he's failed under a previous regime. He's not going to get into a Sean Dyche team. Dele Alli, poor Dele Alli. It's a tragedy. It's an absolute tragedy what's happened to his career, and you know how gifted an individual he is. Failed at Besiktas. Failed at Besiktas this season. He's not going to be getting anywhere near a Sean Dyche team. Where would you even play him? And obviously, as we pointed out, the £10 million thing means he can't really play him anyway. And Gbamin, he was brought in, wasn't he, at great expenses. Idrissa Gueye's replacement, got to be go down as one of the biggest flops in Everton history. Yeah, I think that's Feldwell's biggest challenge this summer. Mm-hmm. Getting rid of the deadwood like that, these players who've got a year left on the contract. But in terms of incomings, yeah, never signed an appropriate striker. Last time, so they signed Neil Mopay. Nowhere near being a like-for-like replacement for Dominic Calvert-Lewin. And unfortunately, we saw those glimpses of Calvert-Lewin coming back. He was looking like his old self and really sort of galvanised the team and changed the way the team played. Still got to be massive question marks, unfortunately, over Calvert-Lewin's fitness, because Dyche played the long game almost 3 months out to get him what he called properly fit. And then he broke down again before the end of the season. So, yeah, has to be strikers. Those forward positions, that's a priority. And then, like we say, the full-back positions, mostly left-back, because you could put a case in, never mind have somebody to sort of challenge Mikalenko for his shirt. Maybe looking for somebody to actually replace Mikalenko as well, because he's not been entirely convincing himself. So, yeah, strikers and then full-backs.
Mm. I suppose another interesting area that was clearly going to be ripe for a bit of change as well, and we've got to keep an eye on, is the goalkeeping department, because Asmir Begovic is a big loss from that. You know, like we've already said, probably about as able a number two as you could hope for. Came in when Pickford was injured and played against West Ham, Everton's first win of this Premier League season. That was with Asmir Begovic in goal. And, you know, typically he's done well when called upon. There are a lot of experienced second and third choice goalkeepers out there, in fairness. But, you know, he is someone that he's, even if Everton was to say, it sounds like Sean Dyche has acknowledged the suggestion that he might need to sell some of his better assets in order to potentially have any money to spend. Jordan Pickford up there is probably the most valuable in the sense of what he is for Everton, as well as the fee that they'd probably be able to get for him. Obviously, we know Amadou Onana would probably go for good money, but I think Jordan Pickford is more important to this Everton side than Onana is, as we've seen, you know, evidence so clearly over recent years. But you think that if say, for instance, they were to countenance an offer for someone like Pickford, well, if you took the money, you wouldn't be clawing around thinking they desperately need to get another goalkeeper in first choice. You think, well, Begovic could do a job for a little bit while you have a little bit of time there. But without Begovic, I mean, Andy Lonergan is the third choice, very well respected at the club. Alan Kelly likes him a lot. And Sean Dyche has spoken to me about the respect that he has for Lonergan. That's one of the reasons why he names him on the bench, even when there's Begovic already there, because he sees that, you know, he's a senior professional that's working hard at the training ground week in, week out. And if there's an opportunity to get him on the bench as well, it's almost a reward for some of that effort and hard work and a degree of respect that he's showing to him. But he's out of contract, and obviously he's, you know, getting on a little bit now these days, and he probably isn't ever going to be in a situation. You struggle to see the scenarios in which he's going to get onto the pitch. So there's a slot there, and obviously there's some young goalkeepers there: Joao Virginia, Billy Crellin, Harry Tyra, Jean-Luc Laban, who's been in, you know, in sticks for the under 21s for most of this season. So yeah, but it's a big leap for one of them. You know, I've been speaking to Joao Virginia to be an interview in the Echo soon, and you know, he looked back on his career. He's only 23 and played. Is a Champions League football experience. He's played three times for Everton as well. So he's got the most experience of the lot, but there still is a big drop-off between, say, Asmir Begovic and any one of them. So, I mean, I don't know if Sean Dyche is looking there and, you know, hasn't got much money to spend and is, you know, it may well be a big opportunity there for some of the younger keepers to get a chance to step up as well. And then just some of the players that we haven't or we've just touched on, obviously decisions to be made soon. Seamus Coleman out of contract, fully expect him to be given the opportunity to stay if he wants to. And the other one, you know, that we haven't mentioned so far is, of course, Tom Davis, who, you know, burst onto the scene against Manchester City all those years ago and looked so promising for so long. Been really unlucky with injury, I think, you know, when you look back at some of the times in which he's been, even this season, just when there have been opportunities for him to gather a bit of momentum or make a case for a place in the side, he tends to have got injured. Gav, is there anything in particular that you do? What would you be your decisions on Coleman and Tom Davis if it was you who was making the calls?
Coleman, Keith, definitely. Davis, I think the fact that there's been no talk of a renewal indicates that they're quite happy to let go. I think it would be Tom's benefit for him to move on, to be honest with you. I know he's got interest around here, but from a football perspective, he's still a relatively young lad. Got plenty of years left. I think he does want to be sitting out on the periphery of Everton, does he really? I think the Begovic one was disappointing, really, wasn't it? As you say, he played in goal against Newcastle when the Wolves scored, didn't he? That was another crucial win he played, didn't he? He's one of the better ones, better number twos. It just gives us, I'm not sure the circumstance, just gives us a headache that we don't really need to have. I'm just wondering about letting him go so easy. I mean, perhaps means that Pickford is definitely staying.
Baxter Lego is what they call him on the training ground, Gav.
He's so good at
heading the ball from the crosses to test Jordan Pickford with.
All right, okay, good. Yeah, I was just thinking about you used the phrase "based onto the scene." There, Joe, was that Michael Richards copyrighted that quote? Oh. I think. I think his lawyers will be in touch. No, but seriously, there's a lot of stuff to be doing here. Housekeeping, isn't it? You know, this goes back to what we were saying. Coleman, keep Davis go. I think the goalkeeper. You know what? I think there's a question here. If somebody said, yeah, there's 50, 60 million quid for Jordan Pickford, if he wants to go, of course, and it sounds like he's not in a rush to move, is you take it. That's the whole pod in itself, isn't it, really? And because that gives you some flexibility. But yeah, Davis definitely go, Coleman stay. And the goalkeeping is a bit, it's an unwanted eight for us, isn't it, really, the number two?
It feels like this is going to be a summer where it's just about, yeah, you used the word earlier on in the pod, a summer of common sense almost, just dealing with the problems that you've got. And then after you've done all that, working whether there's any room to expand on that. You know, you look at those centre-backs that you've got and say, okay, you know, there should be a way of working this out without spending £4.5 million on Cody. Let's save the money and spend it somewhere else. Thing with Asmir, I mean, Begovic, we don't know, because the club may well have offered him a contract and he's turned it down. It, you know, for all the reasons that we said, it's a shame to see him go. they're all perfectly valid reasons to suggest that he would get first team football somewhere else at this late stage in his career. So of course there is that to think about. But it certainly, however it's transpired, it certainly creates a new problem in one of the few areas where there wasn't one, because you say two of the last three Premier League starts, the one in the middle being the Arsenal in the last game of last season. Begovic has stepped in important games and kept clean sheets, hasn't he? And then you only have to look at the strength of when you see Jordan Pickford and everything that he's done for Everton, particularly under so much pressure in these last 2 years. That's all the end point. That's the peak of a mountain that's built on the firm foundations of having Begovic, Lonergan, and the goalkeeping coach, Alan Kelly, and those working around. And there they all play a bit. And spoke to Alan, and I know Chris has done this as well. Both spoke to Alan Kelly in recent months, and he very much puts Jordan Pickford's brilliance down to his own individual brilliance, but also down to the challenge, the competitiveness, and the professionalism of that whole goalkeeping unit.
Yeah, and Begovic is something. I'm saying on Saturday, he's the only Premier League player I've had a lengthy conversation with, and he's a top man, and he's a really intelligent guy, and the type of people you want around the dressing room, isn't he? He's that phrase, role model, but he is, isn't he? And I think he's a sad loss on and off the pitch, really, and it just gives us another problem we don't need to have. But yeah, I kept on hearing where it's like reset and all that last week. There's not going to be a reset of Everton this summer or next summer. It's hopefully with good housekeeping, doing the simple things well, and some sensible decision making. For very little outlay, we can go into next season in a stronger financial place and a stronger place on the pitch as well. But we need to work smart, and we need to be coherent off it, with proper leadership off the pitch as well. It's down to Dyson Thirlwell to me to work some magic over the summer months in the recruitment team.
Brilliant. Thanks, Impact Gov. Right, well, we're 10 minutes from the hour mark, so I think we'll call it a day for that. If you've missed us for the past week, hopefully that satisfies some of the appetite. And again, we are sorry for not having done anything last week. It feels like such an obvious thing to have done. It just wasn't quite possible, and apologies for that. We are going to hope to keep to two podcasts a week throughout the summer, so there'll be plenty, because I think it's going to be a busy summer for Everton. Whatever happens on and off the pitch, I think there's going to be plenty to talk about. So our plan is to be back with you on Friday. We will probably look to do a sort of a season recap, I think, go through some of the highs and the probably maybe at that point, nearly a fortnight on from Bournemouth, be a safe time to go back into some of the lows and the more difficult moments of it as well, as we kind of discuss everything that's gone on. But look, thanks so much for your patience. Thanks for joining us. Thanks for following us all season. We really do appreciate it. Thanks for listening to us. Thanks for reading our stuff. And if you carry on doing it, hopefully we'll have plenty to provide you with and keep you entertained over the summer. So thanks so much for joining us, everyone. Keep smiling. Let's hope you're getting some sleep now.
You've been listening to the Royal Blue podcast from the Liverpool Echo.